As a child, Otha Ellis Bates McDaniel taught himself to play guitar, but he never found one he liked, so he built his own. Soon after, his rectangular-shaped axe with an old TV dial for a volume knob could be heard on radios everywhere as he launched the beat heard round the world. He was Bo Diddley. His handmade guitar is at the Hard Rock Cafe in Times Square. Thousands of other priceless pieces of rock history are at Hard Rock Cafes, casinos, and hotels around the world. To learn more, visit hardrock.com.
Little Steven's Underground Garage's coolest conversations, presented by Hard Rock Cafe, hosted by the Mighty Manfred.
This is the Mighty Manfred here with you at Little Steven's Underground Garage, and it's time for today's coolest conversations, presented by Hard Rock. Remember to follow and subscribe, rate and review. My guest today is Jenny V, who, along with our very own Slim Jim Phantom, is responsible for our holiday coolest song of the week, Have a Rockabilly Christmas. In addition to playing with Slim and his rockabilly trio, she's also a touring member in the Eagles of Death Metal and pursues a solo career as well, all of which we'll touch on shortly. But first, let's take a listen to some of Have a Rockabilly Christmas in Little Steven's Underground Garage. Manfred, and today's guest for our coolest conversations is Jenny V, Canadian singer, songwriter, guitar player, bass player, and she's played with the likes of Courtney Love, currently plays in the touring version of the Eagles of Death Metal. But what brings her into the Underground Garage today is that she contributes with our very own Slim Jim Phantom on this week's coolest song in the world, Have a Rockabilly Christmas. How are you, Jenny?
I'm great, and I hope everybody out there had a rockabilly Christmas this year.
Me too. You know, I want to know first, though, did the jolly old elf linger long at your pad the other night?
He did. On his hot rod sled with a 409, he landed at my pad, and I got everything a girl could want.
Oh, well, what was your favorite gift to give, and who got it?
Well, it was a joint gift that me and my sweetheart Slim Jim Phantom got for ourselves. We have expanded our little family, and we have a Maine Coon kitten named Coco.
Oh, so is that the only pet you have?
No. That would make it five now. We have four cats and one dog.
Four? Wow, that poor dog. Do they all beat up on the dog?
They kind of do, but he holds his own. He's a little guy, but he's tough. They're all from the streets except Coco. Coco came to us from Ukraine, actually, but our little dog, he holds his own. His name is the Great Bandini.
The Great Bandini. So all these cats, of course, herding cats comes to mind. Does a dog ever try and sort of boss all the cats then? You said he holds his own?
He does. He herds the cats. When they try to go outside and down the stairs, he very quickly will herd them back up. He's a good little dog.
And he's very good with a kitten.
Yeah. I mean, she's pretty crazy. I don't know if you know about Maine Coons, but they're the biggest breed of cat. So she's only 4 months old, and she's already almost 7 pounds.
Wow. I've got,
I know.
Yeah, I've got a little dachshund mix, and yeah, he's 15, but right now I'm got a little visitor with us. We're watching a dog that is a Papillon, and I'm sure that the Maine Coon that you've got is got to be at least twice the size of this little Papillon that I've got. Now, you grew up in Sudbury, Ontario, in Canada? What were holidays like growing up there, Christmas time?
They were truly cold. They were cold with a lot of snow. That's what I remember. I remember the snow coming up to my waist, and we would do crazy things like kick sleds onto the roof and slide off. And we would build our own ice skating rinks. We had snowshoes. It was very, for me and my family, we were very outdoorsy, and we lived on an 80-acre farm, so we had a lot of fun with winter sports and things like that. And of course, a lot of music as well.
Oh, what kind of music did you grow up with then?
Well, Luckily, my family, we had a satellite dish and not a lot of kids had that. So in the 80s, when I was growing up, I could tune into American MTV and also different kinds of radio stations. So it, at my fingertips, I could cruise around and find stuff that I liked. And a lot of it was of the moment, new wave music and the Smiths and the Cure. But I also really loved Buddy Holly and ELO and the Clash. It was kind of an eclectic blend, but I developed my taste pretty young because I feel like, you know, pre-internet, I kind of had at my fingertips the ability to discover a lot of music quite easily with that satellite dish.
Well, our coolest song in the world this week is Have a Rockabilly Christmas. And so did you, in fact, have blue suede stockings hung by the chimney?
We had regular stockings, fuzzy red ones, with leopard trim hung by the fireplace with care. But maybe next year we'll make some official Slim Jim Phantom blue suede stockings. I think that's appropriate.
I think that would be brilliant. How many Rockabilly Christmases have you had?
Well, since everything traces back to Rockabilly, everything goes back to Gene Vincent, Nettie Cochran, and Elvis Presley, I would say that, oh gosh, give away my age, I've had multiple decades of Rockabilly Christmases.
Well, I read somewhere that you consider yourself a recovering goth, and you mentioned hearing all this stuff, you know, as you're growing up on the satellite dish, so you're getting that stuff. If that's the case, if you are a recovering goth, how does a Rockabilly Christmas compare to a goth one?
I don't think I'm truly recovered. I think once a goth, always a goth. But there are a lot of similarities, like the leopard and leather, and a lot of the aesthetic similarities are definitely there. So I don't think they're that far off the mark. Hairstyles are very important.
Oh, yeah, that's true. When did Have a Rockabilly Christmas get recorded?
Gosh, we thought of the idea to do a Christmas song in the summer, funnily enough, when the Stray Cats were out on the road. Eagles of Death Metal had just finished a tour, and Jim was starting his tour with the Stray Cats this past summer. Mm-hmm. And we were just both on top of our playing and really knew that we wanted to get in the studio when we got home. And I thought of the idea to do a Christmas song. And so we started writing it in September, and I believe we recorded it in October, early October.
Early October. Now, my notes say it was produced by Dylan Gardner, and he also is credited with writing the song along with you and Slim Jim. So how did the song get written?
I wrote the chords and the chord structure and the vocal melody sitting at home on the couch. And we have a drum kit and guitars and basses and the whole nine yards in our living room.
Right.
So Jim started playing along and gave it his signature kind of swing, rock beat feel. And a young friend of ours, Dylan, he plays in a band called The Communicants, and he has a home studio, and we knew we wanted to cut a track with him, so we went over to his place, and he wrote the guitar solo that you hear on the song, and he did a great job. And then our friend Dilby Clark mixed it. So we got all our friends involved. The more the merrier.
Do you have any plans to do some more songwriting collaborations with Slim Jim?
Yeah, I do. We just did another track, also produced by Gilby and co-written with our friend Chris Cheney from the Australian band The Living End. So I am working on new material, slowly but surely. The past couple of years, I've really been focused on my playing and touring a lot and not writing as much as I once was, but it seems to come in waves for me. And right now, I'm definitely in a creative place and that kind of mindset where I'm writing again and really wanting to collaborate more, because in the past, I did mostly everything myself.
Now, earlier this month, you were out on the road as a Slim Jim Rockabilly Trio, and that was you on bass. You did several Northeast shows. One of the places that you played, Randy's Man Cave in Bourntown, New Jersey. I've always wanted to do that, but it's just never come together. What was it like to play at Randy's place?
So much fun. It was amazing. Randy's place is a little hidden gem. It's a really cool town, Bourntown. It's kind of like what you imagine Anytown USA at Christmas time. Really, really cute. And his store is chock full of treasures, all sorts of things, memorabilia, magazines, cassettes, vinyl, action figures. It's really, really cool. And he gets a good crowd in there. So it was a lot of fun to do an intimate show. And also a lot of storytelling was involved. And I always love hearing Jim tell stories. You never know what he's going to remember and talk about. So that was a lot of fun.
Cool. Well, any plans to play on New Year's Eve?
Not this year. This year it's going to be pretty chill. We don't really have any plans. We seem to always have plans, but This New Year's Eve, we might stay home. Last minute, something might come up, but we're not playing this year. Last year, I did a show with Eagles of Death Metal in Santa Cruz, and that was amazing. But this year might be very chill.
Well, I'm down with being chill.
Yeah.
So in the intro, I mentioned you would play with Courtney Love and that you're currently part of the touring band of the Eagles of Death Metal. And I want to talk some about your solo career. But first, how did you land the Eagles of Death Metal gig?
Oh, their bass player, Matt McJunkins, departed to tour with The Perfect Circle. And mm-hmm. they were in need of a bass player. And I had just moved to L.A. And we have an old friend, mutual friend, in a gentleman called Eden Galindo that I've known him since the 90s. And he's kind of the fifth member of Eagles of Death Metal, plays guitar mm-hmm. on a few songs and text for the band. And he suggested me to Jesse and Josh Homme. He said, I know a gal, Jenny, she just moved here. And when I moved here, I knew that I wanted to get back to bass playing, and I had a feeling there was something waiting for me in LA, and just really focused on that, remembering my start and my first instrument being bass, and really just wanting to explore that. And sure enough, I got a message pop up. Eagles of Death Metal needs a bass player. Come meet me and Jesse downtown at Monty Bar. So that was it. There was no audition. It was just written in the stars. And I met Jesse. We became fast friends, hung out a lot. And a couple weeks later, I walked into the door and he said, do you want to be an official lifetime member of Eagles of Death Metal? And I said, hell yeah.
Wow. So what was it that brought you to LA specifically? Just having this kind of feeling of wanting to be someplace different, or this sort of, hey, I think there's something good is going to happen.
Yeah. I always really loved LA. I've lived in a few different places over my adult life, all for music. I lived in London for 2 years. I lived in Nashville for a couple of years, and I was living in New York for about 5 or 6 years, and I was ready for a change. And it was time to pack up the car and come to LA. I had a lot of good friends here from over the years of touring, and I had that foundation, so it was just time for a change. And it wasn't too long until I joined Eagles of Death Metal, and it's the funnest thing ever. I was just ready for it. I wouldn't, 10, 15 years ago, it wouldn't have been time for that, but my playing is super strong, and it was just a really great match.
So this EP, Suffer, from 2017, is that still your most recent solo release?
It is. Was that 2017? I can't even remember. I think, I recorded that 4 years ago. And it took me a while to release it. So I think that was 2017. And even the title is going to give you an idea of kind of where I was at that time when I was making the transition from New York to LA. I'd been going through a lot of different challenges in my life, relationships and things like that. And that was the EP that came out of that situation. And it's definitely not where I'm at right now, but at the time, it kind of encapsulates all my feelings.
Yeah, I mean, I wrote myself a note here. Suffer connotes an especially trying time.
Exactly.
and you've definitely touched on that. So the track I want us to listen to is the opening cut, Hospital Bed. And the sister you're singing to, interacting with in the song, is that a literal sister or a spiritual one? What was going on with
you? This is my sister, and she struggled with addiction and got to the point, her rock bottom point was being told she was dying. And she decided to get better. And she did. And she's amazing. And I love her so much.
And where does she live these days?
She lives back up in Canada, in Toronto.
Over the holidays, do you ever get together with your family? Because you guys seem to be pretty well spread out.
We are spread out. And I don't see my family very often. I left many, many years ago. And I have to say my family and I aren't very close. I've made family where I've moved to, and my friends have become my family over my adult life. But I do visit from time to time. Not that often. Maybe every couple of years.
Mm-hmm. So how does your solo career fit in with these other projects you've got going on, whether it's, doing stuff, touring with Slim Jim or the Eagles of Death Metal? Do you get enough time for your solo stuff, or is it in starts and stops?
There's always enough time. As I mentioned, it's when the urge strikes me to write, I will, and I'll release things. And as we were just talking about with my EP, which is a very personal thing, my solo material is a very personal thing. And I have to say, it's not that much fun, because when I go through my feelings and sort through everything and I write and share them in that way, it's a very vulnerable position to be in, versus picking up a bass and backing up somebody else's vision and playing a show with Eagles of Death Metal is pure joy and bliss and fun. And I value my role in bringing Jesse's vision to life for his musical project. And then in my own music, it seems to be a little more of a cathartic experience and a purging of emotions, if you will. So it's a completely different experience for me. It's very vulnerable and raw and can be sometimes painful. However, the new music I'm working on, I'm not coming from that place and those feelings that I've already worked through in my new material that I've been working on. It's a different vibe. It is a little bit more celebratory. So we'll see. I mean, maybe I'll find a lot of joy in that. There's any value to it, but they're two completely different experiences, and they never compete because they're so different. You know, as a human, we're all complex individuals with different needs and exploring different archetypes within ourselves. One moment you feel like helpless in a way, and another moment you feel completely powerful. So with my music, my own music, it's one experience, and then playing with somebody else is completely different. And I think that makes me a very well-rounded individual.
Well, I agree. And one of the things I was going to ask you was, you know, has playing with Slim rubbed off any roots rock or rockabilly flavors in any new material you've been coming up with? You mentioned that doing other collaborations. It, to me, is like rockabilly music, there can be songs that have, you know, sort of more minor chord, sort of somber elements to it. But overall, it's pretty joyous music, you know? I mean, it's getting people up off their seat, onto the feet, moving and dancing. So are there elements of that making its way into your own personal music?
Yeah, I would say so, for sure. And in my childhood, I definitely listened to Buddy Holly and Elvis and the Beatles and all those kinds of bands. So I think that influence has always been there. And in my very first band, Thule, was a power pop punk quartet. So I've kind of explored different emotions and vibes and feels and sounds throughout my career. So it's a natural evolution, and kind of going back to the start is what's happening right now with my new music, plus collaborating with Chris and where he comes from. It's a really interesting mix, and I'm really, really happy with the direction that it's taking. I can't wait to do more.
Excellent. Well, Jenny, thank you very much for speaking with me today on our Coolest Conversations.
Thank you, Manfred.
Best of luck in the new year to you and Slim Jim. Please let them know I sent howdy.
I will. I'll do that for sure.
All right, well, let's go out with Hospital Bed. Is Jenny V off her EP Suffer and Little Steven's Underground Garage? Jenny V, that was Hospital Bed, off her 2017 EP titled Suffer. This is the Mighty Manfred, and thanks again to Jenny for speaking with me today on our Coolest Conversations. Thanks also to Olivia Callahan for producing our podcast. Join me again next week when my guest will be Michael Monroe, former lead singer of Hanoi Rocks, whose most recent solo offering is called One Man Gang. That's your next week's Coolest Conversations, presented by Hard Rock and Little Steven's Underground Garage.
As a child, Otha Ellis Bates McDaniel taught himself to play guitar, but he never found one he liked, so he built his own. Soon after, his rectangular-shaped axe with an old TV dial for a volume knob could be heard on radios everywhere as he launched the beat heard round the world. He was Bo Diddley. His handmade guitar is at the Hard Rock Cafe in Times Square. Thousands of other priceless pieces of rock history are at Hard Rock cafes, casinos, and hotels around the world. To learn more, visit hardrock.com. Don't let it be bad, baby, diamond ring.